Hello everyone, welcome to Villa Together, the full 90 podcast with myself, Chris Ellis. And once again, I am joined by Joe Davidson and Ian Gillett. Joe, how are we doing today?
Very good, thank you. Although it would have been better if we'd won.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, isn't it? Football always has the defining factor over how good we are. Ian, how are you doing?
Frustrated, mate. Spoilt my weekend. Not happy.
Yeah, I know the feeling. So, full 90 podcast, aftermath of Aston Villa 1, Brighton and Hove Albion 2. Disappointing day at the office. It's a third home defeat in a row for Aston Villa. We still sit sixth in the league. So, when you kind of take into context, we're sixth in the league. Theoretically, we won our game in hand. We would be level on points with Chelsea. Both having dropped the same amount of points. So not too bad when you look at it like that. But I think the kind of overriding thing for me is there's frustration, but losing those three games at home, three games that they're not necessarily bankers, but three games that are all winnable and at home, it kind of is a bit of an odd one. But obviously it's not as straightforward as it seems. So Joe, what are your thoughts on the game and the performance?
Unfortunately, I think this is one of those just absolute mental performances, really, where did we deserve to lose that? Probably not. We were the better team for the vast majority. Their first goal came through one of our players stepping in, the ball squirming out past our defenders. Welbeck goes the length and scores. It's hard to look too much into that. Could we have been playing a bit of a deeper line, perhaps? Maybe, but then would we have been quite as effective at pinning them back? Probably not. I think the point that really summed the game up was Trezeguet missing that open goal. As soon as you saw that, you just knew it wasn't going to be our day. And that pretty much summed the whole thing up. I mean, Watkins tripped over his own feet. Trezeguet then missed two open goals back to back. We hit the post twice and we had a penalty disallowed.
Yeah, it's it's not great when you put it like that. What do you think about, you know, obviously conceded two goals, lost the game, obviously created enough chances. What about our overall performance overall? Do you think that there was anyone who kind of performed below par today?
I felt the defensive unit as a whole wasn't really up to it today. As I say, I'm not putting too much on that first goal. I view that very much as just a sort of freak footballing incident. Those things happen. You can't really look into it. But I wasn't overly impressed with how easily Mopai got round the back a few times. We were quite lucky, really, that Martinez came out as quickly as he did on at least two occasions. And that the marking for the second goal was poor. That was the sort of thing we did last year where everyone switched off and just missed the man at the back post. You've got to be getting to that. I felt the midfield as a whole was all right, I guess. Douglas Lewis spread the ball reasonably well. McGinn seemed to have it set out from the start that he was going to pass for their team every time. And this early swap of Bertrand Traoré for Barkley didn't really work, in my opinion. I can see the logic, as we're not really playing a 4-3-3 anymore. It's more of a 4-2-3-1. And I guess he was meant to come on as a sort of focal point between Grealish and Trezeguet. I'm not convinced, to say the least. It was something we were discussing earlier, and we noted that Bertrand Traoré passed over 75% of his passes backwards, which, I mean, yes, I understand you need to retain the ball and sometimes you absolutely have to go back. But surely, playing in wide positions, you expect at least some crosses coming in. I felt that as soon as they worked out his ridiculously one-footed nature, that they basically just nullified him altogether. I think losing Barkley and that link-up between himself and Grealish was a real loss. Grealish, to me, looked tired as well. I didn't think he was at his best, not even close. I think the performance as a whole just looked a little bit tired. And we went behind early and we just didn't seem to be able to get out of sort of third gear to really push it to them. That combined with a bit of bad luck. And unfortunately, that's all it takes at this level for you to come out as a 2-1 loser.
Yep. I totally agree with everything you said. I think what you mentioned about Traore, which we spoke about just before we came on, was he's obviously got talent. He's good on the ball. You know, he's comfortable with the ball. But what you want to see, I think, probably you want to see him committing players a bit more. And as you say, he didn't do that. And he got the ball. He was comfortable on the right hand side, on his left, and the Brighton defenders just allowed him on his left foot because I knew he was always going to come onto it. And in all fairness, you know, you look at their back three, Dunk White and Dan Burn. You know, they're relatively, you know, they're big guys. No, it's Webster, isn't it? Burn came on. They're big guys. They're good in the air. So they're going to eat that up all day. What I think I'd like to have seen a bit more was a bit of give and go, which we saw at times. I think Trezeguet and Cash tend to do that fairly well. I think they did it a few times, didn't they? Like you mentioned, the Trezeguet chances that he had. I think that came from that down the right-hand side, Trezeguet and Cash linking up well, which I think in all fairness, I think Trezeguet and Cash were probably two of our better players today. I know, obviously, Trezeguet probably had more chances than anyone, which he so often does recently. But I think Traore seemed quite reluctant to do that. I think at times as well, he was kind of doing what Barkley has done recently, which was kind of being a number 10 position. But then for the press, he was pushing on and being as part of a two with Watkins or sometimes a three with Grealish and then pushing forward. So I think Traore was just, he was drifting a bit more than maybe he'd want to kind of on that wing. But yeah, I suppose that'll come with time. But yeah, it's when you see your winger passing the ball backwards that often, you know, it's not kind of good showing. You want to see them be a bit more penetrative going forward. Ian, what are your thoughts on the game and the performance overall?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Joe has mentioned. I thought we started really well in terms of home performances this season so far. I thought we've been quite slack in the first 10 minutes, but I thought we sensed the kill quite early and it might have contributed towards the goal. Like Joe mentioned, the link-up play down the right-hand side early on between Cash and Trezeguet was really encouraging. We were getting in behind them, created a few openings, albeit half chances. But then in terms of the first goal and Welbeck having the sort of freedom of our whole defensive half to run the ball and then chip it over Emi, it's a bit annoying because I think we're chasing a result in the first sort of 15 minutes again. If you look at the positioning of both Konsa, who's gone close to Maupay to press him, Maupay's got his back to our goal in Brighton's half. Mings' positioning is questionable. Why is he there when both of our centre-halves are sort of deep inside their Brighton half? And then if you look at the footage, Mings goes to put his foot in to win the ball back before the ball gets played to Lallana to play it through to Welbeck. And I'm thinking that's both of our centre-halves within the Brighton half trying to force the issue, a bit of impatience for me, if you'd like. And then we don't track Welbeck's run at all. It's lucky how the ball does squirm through to him and then he's got the whole of the half to run into. And it's a good finish, to be fair to him, and it's a well-taken goal. But yeah, it was frustrating. I thought after the goal, we reacted really well. Traore coming on so early. I thought his early play link up in the middle ground with sort of McGinn, Grealish and Louise was good. We were moving the ball quickly, created a few openings. Trezeguet's chance was just, I thought it was, I was already celebrating, especially the second one, the follow-up. You're thinking, how can he miss? And he somehow put it over the bar. And then Ollie Watkins soon after, a good challenge by the centre-half to force it onto the post. But yeah, you'd expect him to eat that up. Second half, we started really well, got the goal back into them early, which is what all Villa fans wanted. You're thinking if we can start fast, get the goal back and then we can go on to win the game. But then I thought we had a period of 10 minutes after we equalised where we sort of sat back, let them have more, sort of dictate the play more. And then, like Joe said, the marking was slack for the second goal. I don't think even McGinn or Louise has to be eating that up in that centre ground. Trezeguet nearly gets a little nick on it as it's squared back. And then you're sort of thinking, well, he's coming in from the back post. Can Cash be getting closer to him? Can he get him be getting out a bit more? But yeah, it's just a frustrating 90 minutes of the whole. I mean, the penalty would have been a get out of jail card at the end for us if we could have come away with a point if Ollie had put it away if it was given. But yeah, it's It's not a bad performance. We've created enough chances, and in any other game, we probably would have come away with at least a point or three. But yeah, it's frustrating. Throughout that second half, you saw the clock ticking down, and you're thinking, come on, start creating. But Brighton just were looking to defend it. They brought on Big Dan Burn, and they were eating up those sort of high balls into the box. Matt Ryan, the keeper, did well as well. But yeah, we've just got to try and muster a bounce back ability again. Playing away from home sort of suits us at the moment. But yeah, I think at home, we're trying to force the issue a little bit too much rather than just sitting in.
Yeah, I think what you've just said almost sums up our three defeats at home, the last three games at home. You could see it today, particularly for the first goal. Just trying to, it's almost being kind of too aggressive at times and trying to force it too much. I think when you look at the good wins that we've had away from home, obviously Leicester and Arsenal, probably two of our best performances of the season, we almost have more of a concentration on being solid at the back. And then when we get forward, looking to get forward in numbers, but not overcommit. I feel that when we're at home, and it worked fantastically against Liverpool because we scored seven against them. But when we're at home, we overcommit, and we've done that. And we did that against Southampton. And it's kind of being too aggressive in the wrong areas and also a bit of naivety. You look at the Southampton game, you know, giving away those silly free kicks because we've given the ball away, being naive. And obviously we're doing it again today. So I think sometimes it needs to find that balance at home. And I get it. I get it. You're at home and you expect to be on the front foot. But, you know, the most frustrating thing for me is Leeds, Southampton and Brighton at home, three games in a row. We've got nothing from them. And, okay, yeah, we've beaten Leicester. We've beaten Arsenal, beaten Liverpool. You know, some good wins along the way against some good sides. But how long can you maintain playing teams at home? I'm not saying we're better than them, but you're playing teams at home who, in all fairness, those three teams, you know, we there's the likelihood that we're going to be challenging with them for the kind of middle ground of the Premier League, hopefully anyway. So we need to be getting something from them, especially at home. And I know it's a bit of an odd season because there's no fans. So is the home advantage really there? But it's just frustrating to have got absolutely nothing from them. Are we going to go to their places and get points? I'm not so sure. It could work complete flip. But I just think at home, we need to be getting at least something in those games. And that is the most frustrating thing for me.
I think it's fair to note as well that we are setting up differently home and away at the moment. Yeah. We are trying to play almost the Liverpool style of football at home for the most part, with the exception of the game against Liverpool. We're trying to play this high aggressive line, really aggressive press as soon as we lose possession, essentially trying to pin teams in their own half. And I'm not convinced we're actually that good at it. We've tried to do it against Southampton, Brighton and Leeds and lost all three. And all three of them, we've ended up trying to do that, getting stretched on the counter and being basically dismantled in the end. We're actually a far better team when we sit back a little bit and use those newly acquired elements of pace that we've brought to the squad. That's why we're so hard to play against away, and it's why we were so good against Liverpool. I think, without wanting to be overly dramatic about it, it comes across as slightly arrogant on our behalf that we feel we can now just outplay teams like Brighton and Leeds and the such. And we're quickly finding out that we can't do that.
It is frustrating, but you can see it. And I think last season when we stayed up post lockdown, we could all see, everyone saw it, not just Villa fans, but everyone saw it. We were more solid at the back, and we were building from the back. And it was a case of let's try and make sure we don't concede and see if we can get a goal. And ultimately, that's what saved us. You know, getting those 8 points from those last four games, that saved us. That kept us up, and we seem to play like that and work from that in the away games. But in the home games, as you've said, Joe, and I think you're absolutely spot on there, it is a bit of an arrogance. We think, right, we're at home, we're gonna tear these teams apart. And I think that kind of comes from, you know, the good wins that we've had at the start of the season. Obviously, the Liverpool win was massive win. It was a bit of a freak result, but, you know, impressive nonetheless.
And I think the players have taken that, you know, whether the coaching staff feel the same as well. I think the players have taken that. I thought, you know what, at home we can beat anyone. And obviously it's clearly not the case. So I just find it just so bloody frustrating. Just before we get our guest on, what are your thoughts on the penalty decision? Ian, I'll come to you first. Was it a penalty?
In real time, as I'm watching the game, I think, oh, Trez, you've had a mare there. You've gone up, you've flipped your legs backwards, and it's definitely not going to be a penalty. VAR will rule this out anyway. Oliver's given it, but VAR is going to turn it over. Then when I actually look at it and see it slowed down and see that, yes, Trezeguet's manipulated the ball backwards inside. Sonny March gets a little flick with his heel, the tiniest flick, but he's still, the follow-through still goes straight through Trez's ankle. And I can't see how he's overturned his initial decision. For me, for the ref to go to the screen, VAR has to be saying, it's a clear and obvious mistake. You need to go and look at this on the screen. How is that a clear and obvious mistake? For me, it's not. He clearly takes the man, albeit he gets a little nick on the ball. But does he manipulate the ball? Movement? No. Trezeguet manipulates the ball inside and he's still in possession of the ball and then gets his leg taken out, which then stops him creating something else. I know Trezeguet goes down dramatically, but for me, it's a difficult one because if I'm here as a Brighton fan, I'd be saying, no, he gets a touch on the ball. It's quite clear he gets a touch on the ball. I don't care if he takes the player's leg afterwards. But as a Villa fan, you're looking at it thinking, are you seeing what's been given this season and last season and VAR not overturning decisions? You look at the sort of Fernandez one against Konsa back end of last season at Villa Park and you think, well, just needs some consistency because I don't know what is a penalty and what isn't anymore. I'm really not sure.
Yeah, it is frustrating. Joe, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, I do think we have to address the fact that, yeah, Trezeguet went down like he'd been shot by a sniper, didn't he? It was slightly embarrassing. He's got a bit of a habit of doing it, and I wish he wouldn't. But at the same time, that was a penalty. There's no two ways about it. Based on the standard that's been set this season, the criteria that's essentially being used now is, has the defending player regained possession of the ball or at least depossessed the attacker? No, he hasn't. Trezeguet still has the ball. He's still going forward with the ball. And he has completely stopped him getting there by kicking him in the shins. It's a penalty. There's no two ways about it. And this isn't just Villa fans saying it either. There's been numerous pundits, including the likes of Lineker and Shearer, coming out and saying that that is a stonewall penalty. I don't really see how there can be too much debate around that. I mean, don't get me wrong, 10 years ago, absolutely, it wouldn't have been a penalty. But based on the standards we're seeing today, that is a penalty.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you've kind of put a nail on the head there, really, in terms of that. Yeah, okay, he gets the nick. Nicks the ball, but does he have possession of it? No, he doesn't, because it's more with Trezeguet than Solly March. Solly March gets a nick on it, but he's almost going the other way. And then his foot, he clearly hasn't got possession of the ball because his foot kicks Trezeguet. So he's not depossessed him. It's not a tackle, a clean tackle. He's knocked it away. Doesn't really make a massive difference. He's got a touch on it, not a massive difference. And then obviously he's kicked Trezeguet. I do think that the dramatic, exaggerated fall probably doesn't make it look better. But I think at the end of the day, you look at it, who was it? Someone, was it Sterling? I can't think who for, was it for Man City a couple of weeks ago? And he's beaten a couple of players in the box and someone's kicked him and he's carried on going. And he's tried to get a shot away or pass it off and he hasn't got a penalty. But if he goes down, he gets a penalty. So is that, you know, I know it is as silly as it is that a thought in Trezeguet's mind that, oh, I need to go down? You know, he hasn't kicked me hard enough to go down, but a kick on a player's ankle, nonetheless, is a foul. And I think if that happened anywhere in the pitch, referee, no hesitation, that's a free kick, and that's a foul. So it's disappointing. I think Ian mentioned earlier, you know, it would have been a get-out-of-jail-free card if we'd have had that penalty and if we'd have scored. I did think, as you said, I think, Ian, about has Trezeguet kind of, you know, is it not a foul and has Trezeguet dived? That was my first thought. He clearly hadn't. But then my second thought was, before I saw the referee go towards the pitch side monitor, I was thinking, oh no, you know, I know Watkins scored before, but Watkins last minute, he's under a lot of pressure. You know, is he going to miss it? You know, like our mate Greville said about don't put Watkins on penalties. So and the thing as well is, you could get like two of the worst penalty decisions I've seen. The worst one that we saw was against us last season, Konza on Fernandes. Fernandes turns on the ball. He tries to do a pirouette on the ball in the box, ends up treading on Konza's ankle, somehow gets a penalty, and VAR don't turn it over. It's clearly not a penalty. So how is that a penalty, but our player getting kicked on the ankle in the box is not a penalty? And then the other one that I think about is, and I know it's slightly different, is Eric Dyer against, I don't know who's put the ball in the box, but it's against Newcastle. Ball goes in the box. Dyer's jumped up. His hands are, they're not up in the air. His hands are down, but he's slightly nicked his arm, and that's a penalty. And you think, do you know what? It's like, that's a penalty because Eric Dyer hasn't got, you know, he's too big to be able to move his arms quick enough away from the ball. But then you have a player kicking somebody's ankle in the box, and that's not a penalty. And it comes back to, you know, they talk about the clear and obvious. Was it a clear and obvious error? No, it wasn't. So it's a penalty. And it is frustrating. I think a point you could have taken, because, you know, when you look at the stats on the whole, we were the better team. So it just kind of really frustrating. Right, I'm going to let in our guest for the evening. Right, we have got special guest, which is Maz from the Seagulls Social podcast. Maz, I expect you are better than us this evening, but how are we doing?
I mean, it feels quite nice to be talking about a win for once, as a Brighton fan. They've been hard to come by this season. So I'm not here to gloat though, so don't worry, chaps. I know it's sort of like... It's 3-1 at the moment, so I'm going to be careful with what I say, but yeah.
Yeah, I've got the mouse hovering over the button to boot you out if you start gloating. I noticed earlier that I think you posted it on Instagram. Is this the first time that you're able to celebrate a win since you started the podcast?
That is correct, yeah. as sad as that is. It's the first time we've been able to celebrate a Brighton win since we started our podcast, which was after the... So our only win, apart from against you guys, was Newcastle away, 3-0. Apart from that, we've had no reason to celebrate, which has been very, very painful, which is quite the opposite of you guys. So it's quite nice to be in your, you know, in your position for once.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we've had a few decent wins, which has been good. But obviously, we've all kind of chatted about today's result, and obviously, quite frustrated. In terms of Brighton's performance, how do you think you guys played today?
I mean, it was to be fair, it was a great game. You know, a lot of my I've got loads of different sort of group chats on WhatsApp or whatever, and a lot of my friends, you know, neutrals, were saying that it was a great game. Very open. First half, it's funny enough, I've got another Villa friend, right? And in one of the group chats, he said that Villa dominated the first half, which I'm sure you guys will agree with. But I didn't think it was quite a domination, because the word dominating is quite a big word to use. So I thought it was quite, it was an open game. I felt like both teams defensively were pretty poor, to be honest. There was a lot of, it was very wide, very open. Both teams, had a lot of chances. You know, Trezeguet in the first half for you guys, big miss that was. I don't think it was a case of us playing well. It was more maybe you guys not being at your best, and also, we took our chances when they came to us. You know, with Danny Welbeck, great finish. When he was 1-on-1, don't know what happened with your defence, but fair play to him for finishing it. And then it was just one of those weird games where. I feel like we got away with it a little bit, but on the whole, I thought we played well. I wouldn't go any further than that.
No, fair enough. I think, we touched on that about the goals that we conceded. I think when you look at the stats, you guys had 4 shots on target. So to have scored, obviously, 2, fair play, kind of. It is a case of being clinical, whereas I think we had 15 shots overall. I'm not sure how many on target off the top of my head, but we did have some pretty good chances, and it certainly could have gone, it could have gone the other way. So it's,
yeah, of course.
It's kind of, you know, obviously for you guys, you know, it's pretty decent to be able to kind of be celebrating that win when we did have some decent chances. Obviously, there was two kind of, I suppose, contentious decisions that happened. We'll move on to the first one, which was Lamptey's red card. I've seen a few people say that the second yellow wasn't a second yellow. What are your thoughts on that?
I personally agree. I thought it was a very, very harsh sending off. You know, Grealish has got a bit of a rep to go down. He's in. I don't know if it was a case of him going down too easily or just, you know, he felt contact and went down. I personally don't think it warranted a second yellow. I thought it was very harsh. And obviously with the Premier League rules, we can't appeal it. So, you know, it's a big, big miss for us next game. But on the upside, I suppose, it's just a one game ban. And it was very late on. Even though I know you guys want, you know, well, nearly won a penalty. I was about to say did get win a penalty. thankfully, it didn't affect the game too much. So, yeah, it very, very disappointing. I personally think, yeah, it was a bit of a harsh decision.
Just to comment on the Lamptey one. I feel it was definitely a harsh second yellow. The problem is when Grealish has been fouled 15, 16, 17 times a game like he is being, sooner or later, someone ends up picking up that yellow card purely on the fact that the whole team are fouling him so often. And I think Lamptey fell victim of that today.
I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but Grealish was giving him a bit of jip as well. Like literally about 10-30 seconds earlier, I think he called him, I won't repeat it, but yeah, he basically had a bit of a pop at him and said a couple of words, and I don't think Lamptey liked it. And then literally about 15 seconds after, he's gone for him. And so I think Grealish has done very well to get into his head. And it's quite surprising actually, because Lamptey doesn't strike me as that kind of character to sort of let those things get to him. But yeah, I think Grealish is definitely, I remember him saying something to him specifically a couple of times. And then, yeah, about 10 seconds later, he's done what he's done. So yeah, I mean, let's just be real though. Like, he's put himself in that position. So he's given the referee a decision to make. And I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, what a joke. But yeah, harsh, but it's done. And, you know, we carry on.
I think the thing is as well, like Joe mentioned, I think he's bang on. Because to be honest, it's kind of new for us to actually someone be booked for a foul on Grealish, because you see it so many times. You'll have a player, one player will foul him three or four times and you're like, where's the yellow card? So, you know, it's good to see that. But I think sometimes what you find is a player's been booked and sometimes they'll get a second yellow even when that second offence isn't actually it's a foul, but it's not a bookable offence. But because they've already been booked, they get the yellow card. Sometimes I think it does fall a bit harsh there. Obviously, the other contentious decision that took place was the penalty incident. What are your thoughts on the penalty? Do you think it was a penalty, or do you agree that it should have been overturned?
Again, this went down a treat in the WhatsApp group. So my Villa friend, he was adamant it was a penalty. Well, actually, in all fairness to him, he did change his mind. Now, I personally believe that it was not a penalty, and the right decision was made in the end, simply because of one factor. So for me, March, he's won the ball. He's won the ball. He's touched the ball, and then he's made contact with the Villa player. I believe it was Trezeguet. Is that right? And then he's made contact with Trezeguet. So in my opinion, the fact that he's sort of technically won the ball first and then contact's been made, I then don't think it should be given as a foul. And then sort of the other sort of flip side to it is what my Villa friend said was, he mentioned the fact that why was then after that, once it was overturned, why did then Brighton get the free kick? Which I sort of agree with, because obviously you guys were on the attack and it's ultimately a referee has made a decision wrong, which has been overturned it's then been overturned by VAR and himself. So why have sort of Villa been punished in that sense? But yeah, just to sort of go back to the original question, I don't think it was a penalty and I think the right decision was made.
Fair enough. I think the thing for us that we all kind of said beforehand was, that obviously we appreciate March got a touch on the ball. But in terms of he's got a nick, the ball still was with it was more with Trezeguet than with Solly March. He hadn't kind of touched the ball and taken possession of the ball from Trezeguet. He's touched it, but Trezeguet still got it, but he's almost moved it away from Trezeguet. Then he knocks him off balance. I think that the fall, Trezeguet's fall, I don't think that makes it, it doesn't look good. It makes it, easier for Michael Oliver to overturn the decision when he looks on VAR. But I think sometimes another thing that we mentioned was sometimes when you get a kick or, a push or a knock or whatever in the box and you don't go down, you won't get the penalty. So whether that was in his mind to kind of go down because he knew that if he didn't go down, then he definitely would get a penalty.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I'm sure nowadays, especially with VAR, it runs through a lot of players' heads now where they feel like, do I make a meal of it? And if I do, will VAR catch me out? I think like a lot of these things now, a lot of players now are worrying about what VAR will do if they go down too easy or if they don't go down at all. But, I can't remember which incident it was, but it was sort of before the international break where a player should have, got fouled, but didn't go down. So didn't get the foul. So they got punished for being honest, basically. So we're in that sort of predicament now where players are being honest and not getting the fouls that they should rightly be getting. And then vice versa as well, the other way around where players are falling over and getting penalties where in actual fact they shouldn't be. So, no, I think, if I was a Villa fan right now, I would be a bit annoyed and maybe felt a bit hard done by with the decision. But yeah, from a Brighton perspective, I feel like the right decision was made. But if that, if that was against my team, if Solly March was on the receiving end and, a penalty was given and then it was overturned, I would be raging. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think at the end of the day, I think Ian mentioned if we got that penalty and we'd scored it, possibly would have been a bit of a get out of jail free card. Not that we wouldn't have deserved anything, but I think we missed our chances and we were pretty poor in front of goal. Obviously, we had more chances. We had some fairly decent chances. And obviously, we weren't clinical enough. Whereas, fair play to you guys. Four shots on target, you scored two goals. You were fairly clinical. I think the other two chances you had possibly were in the first half when I think balls through and it was Maupay. Martinez came out. So, credit to you guys for being clinical. That's football at the end of the day, isn't it? Putting away the chances.
Well, that's the thing. It's funny you talk about being clinical. We've been pretty much the opposite of clinical this season. So we barely could hit a barn door, to be honest with you. And like in front of goal, we've been awful past few games. So it made a nice change for us to actually do all right in front of goal. But I'll be honest with you, in first half, I felt like we could have scored 2-3 goals. Like we had a chance with Welbeck as well, where he had that heavy touch and it fell to Martinez. We had the Lallana chance where he sort of hit it wide. And then we obviously had the Maupay chance as well. So I felt like in the first half, we definitely created enough chances to maybe be sort of 2-3 up. But then, of course, you had the Trezeguet chance, which was huge. If that had gone in, that would have turned the game, I think. But no, definitely, it wasn't a game where I'm going to sit here and go, oh, Brighton were definitely the better team, or blah, blah, blah. Like, you guys were, I thought it was a very, very even game. And we just came out on top with a great, great, great goal from Solly March. I think it was just a piece of brilliance from Solly March, which, decided the game in the end, which, you guys played really, really well. And it was a tough game.
Obviously, this season. So just before you go, where do you think you guys will finish this season?
Funnily enough, another Villa sort of page messaged us asking where we predict Villa will finish and where Brighton will finish. So I personally predicted you guys to finish 10th, I think it was. And for us to finish 15th. I'll be honest with you. I personally think now this might not go down too well on a Villa pod, but I think you guys will fall off from your current form because, credit where credit's due. You guys have been really, really good past sort of, up to the international break. And I can't take that away from you guys. Your front three, Barkley, Grealish and Watkins were just incredible sort of going into the break. And going forward, you've got some really, really good, exciting players. So, but I just feel like with the squad you've got, for example, Barkley going out injured in the first couple of minutes, I think that was a big sort of miss for you guys. And if your squad depth isn't up to scratch, which I'll be honest, I'm not going to, I don't know too much, but if your squad can't handle it, I don't see you guys sort of keeping the form that you've had. So I think, yeah, 10th, I think is quite a decent result if you finish there. And yeah, if we finish above sort of 15th, 14th, I think, I wouldn't be happy with that, but the way the season's going at the moment, that's how I predict us finishing.
I think we'd take 10th.
You ask any Villa fan, 100% of them would be happy with 10th this season. All we asked at the start of the season was to build on, obviously, the momentum of staying up on the last day and then building this season. And we said, I think we predicted, didn't we, at the start of the podcast, anything between sort of 10th to 15th we'd be happy with. And early signs have been good, obviously. But like you say, it comes down to squad depth and one or two injuries really do impact you in this league, and you can't afford to be missing the quality of player like Barkley for too long. So hopefully his injury, his hamstring is not too bad when he has the scan, and it's only a couple of weeks and not going into sort of the mumps category. But yeah, it is really important. I think they said at the start of the game, didn't they, so far Villa's used the least players across the league so far. And one reason for that has been the terrific start to the season, and obviously informed players stay in your team. You don't rotate too much. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. But yeah, we'd definitely take 10th at the end of the season.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you guys, actually, with regards to obviously finishing where you did last season. You know, well, yeah, people were still sort of kicking off about the whole Sheffield United incident, and, you know, sort of keeping, you know, staying up because of that. But you know, did you guys expect to sort of be in the form that you guys have been on the back of that?
No, to put it simply. I think building on last season, we expected to do well against, with no disrespect, teams like Brighton, teams like Leeds. We felt that these teams, particularly at home, that we could be getting one, maybe 3 points against. Hmm. Did we expect to come out and be like giant killers, beating the likes of Leicester, Liverpool, Arsenal? Absolutely not. Really, it's a bit of a journey for us because it's quite hard to tell how bad our squad actually was last year and how much of it was just that the squad as a whole was being dragged down by a couple of really poor individuals. And it does appear to be more of the latter, but that is also a pretty big worry, as you mentioned, in case of injuries. If we lost Grealish, if we lost Watkins, if we lost Barkley for any period, probably the same for Mings or Konsa, and actually, I'm going to say the same for Cash, yeah, we'd be in trouble, I think. We could easily drop from sort of where we'd like to end up to being more down around sort of 14th, 15th very easily, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing. I look at your squad and I see a lot of similarities with ours with regards to, you know, those, let's say, a sort of core base of 3 to 4 quality players, and then having sort of, yeah, the rest of the squad sort of making up, you know, the rest of the numbers, so to speak. So yeah, it's very interesting. I feel like, obviously not in stature or fan base, because you guys are clearly bigger than us, but with regards to quality within the squad, I feel like we're quite on a level playing field. But it's just interesting to see how well you guys have been doing, and sort of I feel like we could be getting those results, you know, maybe not the 7-2 against Liverpool or the 3-0 against Arsenal, but I feel like our squad with regards to quality, we definitely can match you guys. And I mean, I suppose in a weird way it sort of showed today, but yeah, with regards to club stature and fan base and all that other stuff, you guys are clearly obviously much bigger. But yeah, I feel like we're quite similar with regards to squad depth and quality, really.
Something worth noting is we're quite a big fan of using stats to build, sort of base our arguments on here as well. And Brighton currently, if they went off the sort of XG models and expected points, it would currently put you on around 14, 15 points. Mm. So based upon all of the data that's being accumulated at the moment, that would suggest, yeah, you're absolutely right. You probably should be a bit higher up. So I would actually expect Brighton to push on a bit this season.
You know, yeah, definitely. It's been very frustrating for us because, yeah, like I think you mentioned earlier, Chris, with regards to sort of playing well but not having much to show for it. That's sort of been the story of our season, really. And yeah, it's just not being clinical in front of goal and just being the better team, so to speak, or having better possession, whatever it might be. And then, yeah, just not creating into points. It's been very, very frustrating as a fan. But hopefully this could be the sort of the turning point for us, maybe. Fingers crossed with, you know, keeping our players fit, Danny Welbeck, and I'll be honest with you, I was the biggest sort of Danny Welbeck. I was slandering him a lot. Someone on Twitter actually called me out and said, "Please come outside," because after his performance today. So I've got to give credit where credit's due. He's done all right. He's played really well the past couple of games. This could be the turning point for us, and be excited to see what happens.
Yeah, definitely, we'll see. But good luck for the rest of the season. And
thank you.
I'm sure we'll speak soon, but massive, massive thanks for coming on and giving your side of the game. Unfortunately, we ended up losing and you got the win. So congrats for that.
No, thank you very much. No, like I said, it was a really, really close game. Great game. We just happened to, like I said, that little bit of quality from March decided the game in the end. Thank you very much for having me on and I appreciate it. And hopefully speak to you soon.
Yep, nice one. Cheers, Maz.
Nice one. Cheers. Cheers. And you guys in a bit.
See you, mate. Right, and then we've got final guest of the night, which is Seb. Here he is. Sorry to keep you waiting. The Brighton fan was gloating and goading us, so we had to put him back in his place. So, obviously, we spoke just after the game and... you asked me about the penalty. We'll go on to that in a bit. What are your kind of thoughts of the performance and the game overall?
I thought we were really unlucky. I feel we dictated the tempo really well. I thought we pushed Albion back and they really struggled to deal with us at times. It's just catching us on the counter-attack that we struggled to deal with. I think they executed that really well. And I think we're a bit naive at times, allowing them the time and the freedom to just flow forward after we committed so many bodies. But I think we were unlucky and a point would have been a fair result.
Yeah, I think you're right. We've mentioned that before. We mentioned about being naive, and it's almost as if when we've played at home, since we had the Liverpool game and we've had a couple of good results, Leicester, Arsenal, etc., but obviously even before the Arsenal game, when we had Leeds and Southampton, that naivety and possibly a bit of arrogance going into those games at home, thinking we could go toe-to-toe with these teams and beat them. And it feels like the same kind of thing happened today.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really difficult. We've struggled to play against almost the teams that you'd expect us to beat. With example of Southampton and today Brighton, Leeds as well, adding that into that category. But I wouldn't say we've necessarily been awful in those games. It's just the putting the ball in the back of the net and then staying tight and compact at the other end that we've struggled with. We either seem to be really good going forward, but really poor defensively, or really poor, really good defensively, but we don't seem to have much going forward. It's really weird. We can never seem to battle both of them together.
Yeah, I think certainly that's something we've got to find, that balance. I think we can do it. It's easier to do away from home because the home team then has to push on us a bit more. So it allows us then, while we're being tied at the back, we can transition from defence to attack easier because teams are coming at us so they open up a bit more. Certainly at home, it's quite tough because we're expected to be on the front foot a bit more. Obviously, you mentioned Southampton. I think when we look at, which Joe mentioned earlier, when you look at XG and the expected goals kind of stats around it, Southampton game, our XG was 2.67. Southampton's was 0.8. And obviously, we lost 4-3 in that game. And then today, the expected goals, ours was 2.35 and theirs was 1.41. So it goes back to your initial point of us being unlucky. And that, when you look at those stats, whether people kind of take that in or take it as a pinch of salt or anything like that, that kind of reflects what you said at the start about us being unlucky.
Yeah, I mean, look, there is an element of unluckiness, but we've also got to take control and, step up. Trezeguet's example today, he had two gilt-edged opportunities and managed to blaze them. And grasp our opportunities when we take them. We seem to do it against Liverpool. We definitely did it against Arsenal. But for some reason, when the good opportunities came to us today, we seem to flap at them a bit.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's, you look at Trezeguet, a couple of chances. Watkins had a couple. I feel like with Watkins, and I'm going to use Jamie Vardy as an example. Jamie Vardy is quite aggressive when he plays. And do you think that you look at the Watkins chance when we played it across, and it was Grealish played it first time across, and Ben White got in there before him. Do you think if Watkins was more aggressive, like Vardy, that he'd have put away that chance? And then also there's that other one where I think it was the Mings looped header and Matt Ryan's there kind of scissor kicking it off the line. If he was more aggressive then, that he could have put those chances away?
Potentially. The Tyrone Mings effort, I don't really know why he didn't go for that. Maybe there was an air of uncertainty about where the ball was landing. I mean, it was a great save by Matt Ryan nonetheless. But I would have liked to see him, as you said, going in, anticipating that. I think the Ben White one, probably less so, due to that just being really good defending. He was stood in the box. It was a great ball in, but Ben White somehow dealt with it. But you can't look back at those chances. You sort of have to take them while they happen. They happen so quickly that you could spend hours looking back and going, what if, but it's really difficult at the time.
Okay, then we'll move on to what we spoke about just after the game. So that penalty, or the penalty that was not, do you agree with Michael Oliver in turn overturning the decision, or do you think it should have stood?
I agree, personally. I don't think it was a penalty. However tight it might have been, I probably think he got the decision right, however controversial that may sound.
What are your kind of reasons for it? Because I think the Brighton fan, and I've seen this as well on Twitter, the Brighton fan that we just had on from Seagull's social said that the reason why he didn't think it was a penalty was because Solly March nicked the ball. Well, I say he nicked the ball. He got a touch on the ball just before he took out Trezeguet or made contact with Trezeguet. I think those, which seems to be the minority that I've seen on social media who have said it shouldn't have been a penalty and they agree with Michael Oliver's decision, are saying the same kind of thing. Got a touch on the ball, so therefore it's not a penalty. Are you kind of feeling along the same kind of lines?
Yeah, I am. It's really difficult, though, because how do you determine how much of a touch of the ball did you get on it? How do you determine how much he went through the opposition, whether he endangered Trezeguet, which I don't think he did. I think he got enough of the ball to say that he did, you know, divert the path of the ball. It's really difficult. I don't think anyone really knows the official rules, even the officials themselves sometimes.
Yeah, I think...
If we use a recent example, so in the Belgium-England game, there was obviously that Eric Dier tackle on Lukaku. And Eric Dier got a little bit of the ball in that, but he brought the man down. And the reason the penalty was given was because it was viewed that whilst he got a touch, he hasn't actually dispossessed the player and he's obstructed him from getting to the ball, therefore it's a penalty. So I think from a Villa fans' perspective, it's the inconsistency that's a little bit hard to take. When you've got an instance like that, that whilst, yes, that was definitely more of a foul, it is in essence the same thing.
Yeah, 100%. I agree.
Yeah, I think that's pretty bang on, to be honest, Joe. I think that is probably the main thing. If there was consistency and decisions were being given for the same things, and decisions not being given for the same kind of things, then you could kind of accept decisions easier. It's like the handball kind of decision and stuff like that. I know they've kind of tried to make it more black and white this year with the sleeve and non-sleeve and stuff like that. But there are so many decisions. And I suppose, you know, as saft as it is, one of the reasons we all love football so much is because there's so many things to debate and talk about. But it's so annoying and frustrating to be on the, you know, the wrong side of what we believe anyway, was us three anyway, obviously not you, Seb. What we believe was a bad decision. Obviously, as we mentioned before, Seb, James, our biggest fan, is going to love this pod. Yeah. So a little shout out to you, James, for watching this and listening to this. James is our biggest fan on Twitter. He simultaneously loves the Villa Together podcast, and he loves Seb, He's always he's messaged me a number of times saying, get Seb on your pod. And then he tweeted last week, didn't he? Saying, get Seb on your pod. So here we go. We've got Seb on the pod. So there we go, James. Special shout out to you. Just before you go, Seb, obviously, we've had a, when you put it into context, I mentioned this earlier. If we win our game in hand, we'd have the same amount of points as Chelsea. So when you put it into context, obviously we've had a fairly decent start to the season. And I think it's just disappointing that we've lost three games at home against three teams that potentially we should be, or possibly could at least be. Where do you think we'll finish?
Yeah, look, we've had a start to the season that very little of us even dreamed of. You know, I was sort of hoping for a really boring mid-table season, but we've exceeded most of our fans' expectations. And looking forward, I mean, I think we've got a lot to be excited for. The addition of Ross Barkley, I think he's just bedding in now, even though he got injured today. Give him time and he will start to really flow alongside Jack. I think that's where we struggled today with Barkley coming off, because it took us back to last season almost of having to rely on Jack to do everything. But looking forward, I think we can be really positive. If we could look to get in the top half of the table and carry on as we are doing, then brilliant. We need to shore up that defence, especially at home, and I think we'll have a good season to come.
And one final thing, despite the defeat today, who would you put down as our man of the match?
Trezeguet, quite simply, for his hard work on and off the ball.
No, fair enough. I think he's certainly up there in terms of one of our better players today.
And one final thing, Chris, before Seb leaves us. Congratulations on braving the elements last week, mate, and raising a bit of money and awareness for homelessness, and obviously money for the Villa Foundation and all the other Villa fans that contributed as well. There was loads of social media posts and they all did so brilliantly well. So yeah, well done, Seb. Congratulations, mate.
Thank you. Everyone involved did brilliantly and it was a pleasure.
Yeah, great work, mate. It was good reading your tweets throughout the night, keeping us updated. It was nice to see.
No worries.
But nice one. We'll have to get you on again soon, but we'll see how James takes to this. But yeah, massive thanks for coming on, mate. We'll speak soon.
No worries. Speak to you later.
Thank you, Izzy. Cheers, Seb. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Pal, up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
See you, Seb. See you, mate. There we go. Final guest, Seb, who's often seen on the Up the Villa podcast. Right, so just before we go, I've just asked Seb the question. Joe, despite the loss, who would you be giving our man of the match to?
Oh, I'm really struggling with this one. I really am. I'm just going to go through the team, I think. Emi Martinez, I felt, played pretty well. He couldn't do a lot with the team that went in. Really progressive with his keeping, came off the line so quickly. As the Brighton fan earlier stated, could have been a couple more if it wasn't for him, really. Target, I felt very average today. Got done too many times by Lamptey down that left side, and struggled a little bit with his delivery. Defensive partnership, I mean, normally it would be Konsa getting it considering he scored our goal, but I can't give it to either of them. I didn't feel either of them played well. Looked shaky throughout. Cash, reasonable, I think, was one of our better performers. Potentially man of the match for me, but I'll get back to that. Centre mid, McGinn, no. I don't feel he's hit the heights this season. And again, today was another one of him just not getting out of second gear. His passing can be a little bit erratic at times, and today it was exactly that. First half. Douglas Luiz, I felt, was solid. Passed pretty well. Couple of speculative attempts. Grealish, as I mentioned earlier, I just felt he looked tired today. He's still easily our best player by a long way, but he just nothing seemed to be coming off for him. And he looked just a little bit leggy towards the end of the game. Watkins, I felt, struggled a little bit compared to his usual standards. Trezeguet, yeah, he worked hard, but he missed at least four really good chances. Bertrand Traore kept passing the ball backwards. For me, I'm going to give it to Douglas Luiz, I think. I think he spread the play, well, controlled the middle of the park, defensively worked hard. Yeah, he gets it for me.
Fair enough. Ian, thoughts?
Yeah, it's a difficult one after a loss. I hate picking one after a loss, but I agree with a lot of what Joe said, especially after the international break, with large sections of our team played two or more games in the international break. So I was expecting them to be a lot more leggy than they were in the first half. I thought Douglas Luiz did tremendously well in the first half, maybe at fault a little for their second goal, been on his heels and just sort of ball watching as the ball came across. But I did rate Trezeguet, especially in the first half, his work rate once again, solid. If he'd have scored the bloody chances, we might be talking about 3 points instead of none. But yeah, I think Trezeguet, my man of the match. But yeah, in hindsight, could we have changed the team a little bit after so many of our players, especially that midfield, were playing in international fixtures throughout, at least three of them played three games. So yeah, there was a lot of tired legs in there. But yeah, it's going to be interesting going forward. Hopefully we can bounce back against West Ham. No easy games in this division. But yeah, I'll give Trezeguet my man of the match. And hopefully we're on the pod next a week on Monday talking about 3 points and a great Villa performance.
Yep. Let's hope so. So yeah, I think I felt that I'm going to end up probably doing what Joe did, to be fair. It's one of them, isn't it? I think when you no one particularly stands out. I think Konsa was probably the better of the two centre-halves, but probably mainly because Mings was pretty poor. Cash, overall, probably the best defender, but probably more so because of his attacking play. I think him and Trezeguet linked up well. I thought McGinn was poor today, and I get the feeling that he was better against Arsenal. I get the feeling that sometimes McGinn maybe, is it because so often he's almost playing in a different position? You know, sometimes he's sitting deeper, sometimes he's kind of more of an eight. You know, he's playing as a six, he's playing as an eight. You know, we've had him at times play as a 10. Whereas, you know, he literally is almost different each game. And obviously with Barkley going off, that almost changes how he sets up. Douglas Luiz, you know, he kind of did, you know, everything he needed to do in terms of controlling the play. I felt that McGinn probably let him down a bit in terms of, you know, didn't give him the support he probably needed. I felt Watkins was quite flat-footed today. I think sometimes the ball went to him and he just seemed to almost be just one touch away from, you know, being able to control it and get a shot off or getting his foot on the end of it or something. I'm going to have to give it to Trezeguet, I think. I just think he was the best of what was.
It's worth noting as well with Trezeguet that his game was very much impacted because obviously Lamptey was killing us every time down that right-hand side on target side. And that we've mentioned it before, haven't we, with the elusiveness of Jack Grealish and what he does for us going forward. There is always going to be space on that side. But Dean Smith addressed it early on. If you did see that he put Trezeguet over on that side for his work rate to sort of cut out that Lamptey free run at target every time. And it did work, to be honest. So he was then sort of limited in sort of his impact of going forward a lot as well, because a lot of the early play was down that right hand side with him and Cash, with some great inter sort of lock-in stuff and 1-2s and getting in behind. So it is worth noting that we did sort of sabotage his play a little bit in terms of that. But yeah, it was a great performance from him. But if he'd have taken his chances, it would have been a sort of 9 out of 10.
It's an odd one, isn't it? Like, you know, we know what football's like, but it very easily could have been 4-1 to Brighton, or, you know, we could have won that 1-3 or 4-2, you know, with a chance. You know, Martinez makes a couple of good saves in the first half, you know, coming off his line really well. And I think sometimes that kind of stuff goes underrated for a goalkeeper to do that. There are a lot of goalkeepers who would either hesitate and by the time they've come out, a player's been able to go round them, or not do it at all, and then the chance is very easy for the player to put away. But in coming out that quickly, you just completely cut out any angle, and it makes it a lot harder for the player. And I think, you know, credit to Martinez for doing that. You know, the chances we missed, we've said it time and time again tonight, really, we need to be a bit more clinical. But you know, in context, as I said, with six in the table, game in hand. You know, if we win that, we'd have the same amount of points as Chelsea. So I think it's just frustrating when, again, you kind of put it into context with the teams that we've lost against and being at home. It makes it frustrating. As Ian said, hopefully next Monday night after the West Ham game, we will be celebrating 3 points. But thank you very much for everyone for listening. Massive thanks to our guests for the night. Obviously, Seb coming in. Nice to hear him. Obviously, as we said, James is a big fan of us and Seb, and Maz from the Seagulls Social. Good to get a bit of perspective from the Brighton fan. Massive thank you, as always, to Ian and to Joe. Thank you very much, guys.
Always a pleasure, mate.
Cheers, as always, Chris.
Nice one. Cheers, guys. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Make sure you subscribe. Anyone watching on YouTube, you watch this video, there's a little button in the corner, a little red button that says subscribe. Click on that, hit subscribe. Follow us on Spotify. We're also available on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts as well. Massive thank you to everyone. And any future videos, there's some good ones that we've had on recently. Yannick Bolasie interview, David Reid from Sky Sports interview. We've got some massive, massive ones coming up. Involving all three of us. So it's good. Looking forward to that. But once again, massive thanks from me. We've been Villa together. Thank you very much.